If you want to be 80 and living, cut the soft drinks out your system.
Cut them
off. Diabetes be sneaking up on us, please pay attention. Please. All these sweeties on salty chips, them just give hypertension. Got some old fashioned itch, do a tilted back and start sipping. What you think that you getting yourself into when you sitting up on the bed, steady watching movies like 24/7.
Try on going you garden, I pick a fruit or start farming, because the state of the health of summer, we mind is alarming.
Jeez, oh, bread. Real talk. That Gary wants.
And now it's time to say good evening to the host of this evening's program, Nicole Griffith.
Hi, good night, everyone. Good night to Barbados. Good night to the panel. And welcome to Healthful Line. Tonight's topic is going to be Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment. This is a very interesting topic now, because we are all in the online space, and we all have to now rethink the way that we do stuff at home and how we will do stuff when we get back into the environment. So this is going to be a very interesting topic. I want you to get your questions ready, and you can reach us at 434-1790 and you can speak to our panelists. So tonight we have Natasha Sobers, who is from the UWI. She's in research. And we have Mr. Christopher Loray. He is the coordinator for youth at the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And we have Ms. Chang, who is with the Slow Foods Barbados. And they are going to be giving us our discussion today. Hi, Natasha. Do you have anything for us this afternoon as it relates to your research? I know that you're always down there at UWI. I know you're always into the new and latest as it relates to our environments and what we can do. Can you give us a little insight?
Hi, good evening, Nicole. Thank you so much for the introduction. And I'm really happy for this opportunity to think about reimagining our school environment. As it relates to the research, you know, we did have school audits where we looked at the school environment to see how healthy it was for our students, and it wasn't really very good. So now we have this evening an opportunity to think about how we can make it better. And that is one of the things with COVID, is that it has given us the opportunity to pull down so that we can build back better. So I think we have to be thinking about about giving the children the best type of access to healthy foods. We have to be thinking about good, healthy eating, learning opportunities. So that can start even now with all the classes that are online. So students thinking about healthy eating, learning opportunities, that is like in the HFLE and integrated science and so on. Access to healthy foods, as I said, in terms of how we market. So we have to be marketing healthy foods to our children, and also allowing them to have that access to healthy foods, selling apples and different fruits and so on. We need, absolutely need active parental support, and we also need role modeling and so on from the teachers. So those are just, you know, these types of positive things that we need in the school environment so that we can reimagine it and build back better. And so I'm thinking of COVID as an opportunity. We came out of the classroom, and now we're going to have to put back up all these different boards and so on. And so this is an opportunity for us to do it better and do it different, and just, you know, come in a much better way than we've done in the past.
Thank you. I see it as a second chance at doing better for our kids. It's like the Lord,
absolutely.
Even with all that, all the negativity that comes with COVID, there's one positive there, that when we do get to go back out, that we all have a second chance at being better for the children of Barbados and the youth of Barbados. Mr. Loray, I know that you were a part of the initial model schools project. Do you want to shed some light how that went and how it's going, and how you think that will impact schools going forward in terms of the environments, if that would work, if you think that's something that will work in the new school environments, and how you feel that will come off?
Okay. Thank you for the introduction, Nicole. So just to expound on a few things that Natasha would have mentioned just now, I'm definitely throwing my support behind everything she has said, and to reiterate that COVID, while it has its many challenges, we're not physically within the school environment right now. It does present an opportunity to reimagine the school environment, which is, you know, the topic of our discussion tonight. So prior to school being delivered online with online virtual learning, the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, the company which I work with, we do have a special projects team, which is focused on childhood obesity prevention. And one of the areas, one of our major projects, which you mentioned just now, is our Model Schools program. So we actually were working with six schools in Barbados, four secondary schools and two primary schools. And they were heavily supportive of the kinds of measures which we're trying to promote to be scaled up at a national level, because they are evidence-based, they're tried and tested, and we are behind the ball actually in Barbados, sorry to say, with the implementation of these kinds of policy measures. So if you look to other countries, for example, and you don't have to go far, they've been implemented in Jamaica, they've been implemented in Trinidad, for example, these kind of school interventions, which really focus on enhancing and improving the health of the kids. And they focus on tackling the environment. It's not to say that because we're talking about childhood obesity, that we're targeting children, the individuals themselves, but we want to enhance the environment. So some of the measures that Natasha would have mentioned, which I will reiterate, things like looking at the marketing of unhealthy products in schools. We know that children are heavily influenced by the messages that they see and the types of brands that they're exposed to. So we have to have healthier alternatives. We also talk about the removal of sugary drinks within these schools. We know that these kinds of liquid calories, these non-nutrient sweeteners that they're consuming, and we do have the evidence to back this, that they're consuming in excess every single day. You know, these are the kinds of things that we want to target. We want to talk about enhancing and increasing physical activity, diversifying the types of activities and movement activities that we offer children. And, you know, just to get at the environment, and we can discuss these further as we go along, but these are some of the things which will go a long way in improving our school environment when we are able to touch back.
Thank you, Christopher. Ms. Chang from Slow Food Barbados. I have been always interested in Slow Food Barbados. And can you tell us how your approach can help reimagine the school environment? What are some of the things that persons can do along the lines of your Slow Food project that they can, you know, can help them when it comes to, or help persons who are in charge of creating policy move forward in getting things done as it relates to reimagining the school environment? Because we know the school environment is one where most environments have similar characteristics, where their canteens, their vendors, their particular items that we know that are sold each time in schools. So I just want to know what is your perspective on how your approach in the small foods business can help that situation?
Thank you, Nicole. It's a pleasure to be on this panel with Natasha and Christopher. Thank you for the opportunity. So I'm Rihanna, Program Coordinator at Slow Food Barbados. For those that don't know, Slow Food Barbados is a registered charity. This month marks our 9th anniversary that we've been present, advocating for good, clean, and fair food on the island. We are part of Slow Food International, which is the world's largest grassroots food movement. And we believe, you know, that we need to transform the food system, especially for the youth, that what we eat matters every single day. So again, there are three pillars of what we do. We focus on biodiversity, second is education, and the third, advocacy. And one of the first programs in 2012, when we started, we set up about 15 school gardens across the island. The belief that a garden is more than just a place to grow food, but it actually becomes the center for exchange and dialogue around gardening, cooking, nutrition, that as young people are able to see where the food comes from, how it grows, and what are the benefits for their body, that we've seen a ripple effect in the health benefits. It's been really exciting because we have a network of some of the island's leading chefs, we have nutritionists on board, and have some of the island's principals and educators as well, that it's been this ripple effect within the communities from north, south, east, and west. Of course, as my colleagues would have mentioned, COVID really brought a little bit of a challenge where how do we reimagine this space where what would have been these vibrant gardens where the youth are in the garden learning how to grow provisions, cassava to sweet potatoes, the plastic fruit trees that they're harvesting soursop from, and how can the canteens use it. So recently one of our programs, thanks to the French Embassy, has what's called the regenerative school bus. We've actually gone digital as an online module to keep the activism in the schools alive. So as of this semester, the last 3 weeks, we've gone into 10 primary schools in 10 different parishes. And luckily, through one of our programs called Slow Cinema, we used film to highlight some of the island's leading farms, everything from Peg Farm with Oinkin Moo to Walker's Reserve for a food forest, a worm farm in St. Michael called Kuduku Worm Farm, to Oasis Blooms, a rabbit farm in St. Philip. And it's been really interesting how to use the creative arts to engage youth to see, learn about all the things that are great, to identify the name of plants, how to take care of animals, how to process, and all the different products that they can choose. And we created a curriculum around English, math, and science to have them talk about the health benefits of aloe vera, turmeric, ginger, couscous grass. And we've actually seen a lot of teachers come on board as well to want to share these resources with the other classes. So my personal belief is that when we're in a school system, it's such a multiplier effect of not only the students that you engage, but their parents, their grandparents, the teachers, principals, the whole communities come on board. And while we cannot have all of our school gardens, we've been lucky to get some funding to design a regenerative school garden, hopefully at Milton Lynch. So we're in the process of designing that, and also in Ada Costa. And the idea is, as soon as we have that up and running, that these become community spaces again to address these issues of childhood obesity. Why is it that 1 in 4 patients struggle with NCDs? You know, because it's a public health epidemic, not only COVID. You know, that I think it's so important of how we started from the ground up, primary to secondary, even into the tertiary education. And again, how can you use education in a creative way? You know, we don't want to just have, you know, the boring lectures telling people what they should do, but it has to be hands-on. Again, that's where the creative industry comes in, having other young agribusiness leaders, having their voices heard. And I think that inclusivity, where we're trying to have an all-across method where everyone feels impetus, that their thoughts matter. And I think when you can inspire one person of the value of why we should not have as many sugary beverages, why to not go to the fast food all the time, you know, to have a more balanced diet, to eat with the seasons, and to eat all the different colors, to learn how to cook. And I think that's been really meaningful for the type of work that we do on the ground. But as a policy, again, we'd love to get more into the ministry to advocate for the school reform with the meals, which has been hopeful. But again, I think having more principals and educators on board with the training sessions, I think we can do a lot more. And again, within the Caribbean region, we're lucky to have a lot of resources at our fingertips, and I'm looking forward to see where we'll go.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to remind the callers, the listeners, you can give us a call at 434-1790 and let us know your thoughts on how we as a nation can reimagine the school environment, because we all have a family member who is in the environment. We all have some person that we care for. And so I think that we should all have a part to play as it relates to reimagining the school environment. We are going to go on a commercial break and we'll be right back.
If you want to be 80 and living, cut the soft drinks out your system. Cut them off. Diabetes be sneaking up on us, please pay attention. Please. All these sweeties on salty chips, them just give hypertension. Get some old fashioned itch, do a tilt it back and start sipping. What you think that you getting yourself into when you sitting up on the bed, steady watching movies like 24/7. Try on going your garden, I pick a fruit or start farming, because the state of the health of summer, we mind is alarming.
Jeez on bread. Real talk, that care one of selves, nah?
Thank you, and we are back with Healthline, and our topic tonight is Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment. I just want to remind you of our numbers, 434-1790. Again, that is 434-1790. And you can give us a call and give us your ideas, because we all need to have a collaborative effort. It can't be just the government. It can't just be NGOs. It has to be a holistic approach. Families, the community, it has to be everyone. So I just want to ask a question to Christopher as it relates to those things that we can put in place. Do you think that policy has a role to play in the reimagining of our school environment? And if so, how do you think that will help?
Yes. Thanks for that question, Nicole. And the answer is absolutely yes. So something that both Natasha and Rihanna would have mentioned is this aspect of education. And we definitely do want to get back into the schools on a continuous and sustained basis. And we want to talk about how we can integrate the ideas of health, nutrition, exercise in multiple levels of the curriculum, whether it's HSLE courses, whether it is integrated science, whether it is mathematics even, and the arts and social sciences, humanities, all levels of discourses. You can integrate some level of health discussion. And I particularly like slow foods approach, where you get the hands-on garden experience. But I want to stress, because we are talking about the school environment, that a lot of these things only go so far. So education is important, of course, and we do want the children to understand the importance of taking care of themselves and for them to take it back to their households and their communities. And Rihanna was especially, she mentioned that particularly, where she said that education has a multiplier effect. So if you've ever interacted with a child, for example, anyone from primary school age and down, you know how persistent they can be. And when you tell them something and they don't always gravitate towards what you're trying to ask of them, it's because they are particularly influential. And you just have to think about, we had, for example, last year, our No Sugar November. And I remember watching a friend's seven-year-old being offered a sweet drink. And she is saying, "No, Granny, we're doing Water Wednesdays." And it's the way that the kids take back this education to their households, which is so important. But what is also key is that if the environment does not facilitate these changes, if it doesn't facilitate the kind of change and the health imperative that we're trying to promote within these schools, a lot of the education can only go so far. So yes, we stress on policy, because we know that if the kids, if the parents, if the teachers, the persons who interact daily within the school environment don't have the option to make the change, then it becomes very difficult. Within the Heart and Stroke Foundation, we did do a polling study of a couple of years back with the assistance of CADRIS, which is a regional health research-based company. And they did it in the Barbados population. And we do have strong support for this kind of change and implementation. Over 90% of our Barbados population does want to see the change, and they want to see it being led by the government. So we know that we have the support there. It's up to the powers that be, our policymakers, whether it be the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education. And we do work collaboratively with them right now. But we need to take the words off the paper now and actually get it in the schools. So we can't have the kinds of programs, we can't have the change that we're seeking to have the benefit to the children if we don't have that kind of policy support. Because only then can we have the strong implementation, we can have the removal of these unhealthy foods and beverages from these schools, and a stronger promotion of the healthier aspects.
Okay, so I know that persons listening, I remember those numbers are 434-1790. Give us a call. But I know that persons listening, even if they don't call and ask this question, but I know they will ask this question, and we hear a lot. Why should we reimagine the school environment if it has been working along? Our grandparents went to school in the same similar environment. Our aunties, our uncles went to school in a similar environment. But what is the research now, and how does that relate to in terms of the school environment and what is happening with our society in terms of obesity and the NCD epidemic that we have on hand? And I know that Dr. Natasha Sobers will be able to shed some light, as she is the one who will be able to give us some of the research or some of the background to some of the research that she has been doing as it relates to the non-communicable disease epidemic and how it relates to eating unhealthy from a very early age.
Thank you very much for that, Nicole. So two things in that question. One, you're saying if it worked for our older generation, why can't it work for our younger generation? That was my interpretation of the question. Is that right?
Not necessarily work, but at least people thought that it was working, because a lot of the people who we thought were healthy, we know that they have a lot of uncontrolled and undiagnosed non-communicable diseases, which we are now seeing now that we have the pandemic on our hands. So yes, at least people thought it was working, but I know that research will show differently.
So the initial question then was, you know, if our older people were in this environment and it seemed to work for them, why should it change? And so, you know, you definitely started to the building blocks of that answer, just to say that clearly now that we have in our population over 25, we have 40% of persons with hypertension. So as you noted, it didn't work. And we have a population where the generally speaking, 67% of us are overweight or obese, so it didn't work. And the thing about that is that even though we know that we have that high level of NCDs in the population, right now it's actually looking worse for our children, because their levels of childhood obesity are much worse than ours. So for our children, they have higher levels of childhood obesity, which translate generally into higher levels of NCDs as they grow older. And the thing about it is that I also want to pick up, therefore, on the why should we change? Well, we are educating our children and we're telling them how important it is to eat healthy, and we're trying to guide them in the right direction. But it's actually unfair to the children to be giving them this education and telling them that they should be doing these things without also providing an environment in which they can do these things. So we should be making the healthy choice the easier choice. And the best way to do that is through policy. So we should be creating an environment that allows them to make a healthy choice. So we want to educate them, absolutely. But then we don't want to educate them and then surround them with sugar, sweetened beverages. So that's where the policy comes in. That's where, you know, the advocacy comes in. That's where we say we have to do the right thing by our children and not make them so vulnerable, because the marketing companies know how vulnerable children are and how vulnerable their brains are. And that's why they do the marketing at that young age. That's why they're putting all these pretty pictures for children and all these wonderful things on their books and so on and so forth, because they know how effective that is. So how we reimagine that is that we want to put pretty pictures of carrots on their books, and we want to put pretty pictures of apples on their books, and we want to put pretty pictures of bananas, and A for apple, B for banana, C for carrot. You know, so again, we started to imagine that environment. So we talked about healthy eating, learning opportunities, and not simply education, because the learning opportunity comes from the curriculum, but the learning opportunity also comes from the little things that we do in class. It comes from the kinesthetic learning in the agriculture that Rhiannon's talking about. It comes from playing with the gardens and so on. That all of that is healthy eating, learning opportunities. So we surround our children with this, and we're surrounding them with the right choices. We're surrounding them with healthiness and wholeness. And that's really about reimagining the environment. How can we surround our children with wholeness? How can we surround our children with all of these healthy things and give and allow them to make a healthy choice? Because right now, one of the things that the study showed was sugar sweetened beverages could actually be found in 100% of canteens, 100% of vendors, 100% of everything that's sold at the school. but fruit and vegetables could only be found, fruit could actually only be found in 40% of those places, and vegetables could only be found in 20. So what we're saying to these children is that these things are important, but not accessible. And that's unfair to them. So we really have to be fair to them and allow, you know, the healthy choice that we're asking them to make to be the easy choice for them.
Okay, so I know coming out of this, persons will ask, and I actually got a message from someone saying they didn't want to call in, but they wanted to find out, how is it that is going to work? And I know that, Christopher, you dealt closely with the model school project, and I know that there was success in the model school project. I know there are persons who will doubt that given the healthier options in schools where in terms of switching up the way foods are prepared and the type of beverages that are sold, I know people will have some hesitancy about it because they will assume that children will not want that option. And I would like to hear, and I guess the wider public would want to know, how did those model schools work, and how did that, what was the outcome of those model schools, and what successes those model schools had?
Thanks, Nicole. So I just want to, I'm here chuckling because we were actually engaged in delivering a nutrition session to a class with Ellerslie last week, Ellerslie Secondary School. And the teacher asks, well, what if an individual cannot, and I say cannot, eat bananas or apples or vegetables? So my response was, do you mean cannot or does not want to? And a lot of the times you find that it's the adults who have the greatest pushback. With the model schools, our six model schools who, again, they're four secondary, two primary schools. And I can highlight that there's Queen's College, the Allen School. Alexandra School, St. Michael's, Christchurch Foundation, Rock Christian, and Ranald Wheat's Primary School. The six of these schools have taken upon themselves to regulate their personal school environments. And they have been doing so for at least 2 years running prior to COVID. And we saw resounding success, resounding support from the kids themselves. And a lot of the times you find that it might be the administration who is hesitant to implement some of these changes, because they themselves, and when I say they, the adults, want to retain this, retain access to some of these things because they think that it is unattainable. But we know that from our research, and I mean, you yourself, Nicole, as a nutritionist, I'm sure that you can support the idea that adults have a sense of hesitancy when it comes to trying to change their diets and their palates, because we have grown so accustomed to a lot of these things. And it's not because they're any better. It's not because they're any cheaper. It's not because they're any, because they're widely accessible. It's because we have grown so accustomed to seeing these things all the times within our school environments, on our shelves. But it's the kids who actually do gravitate towards the messages, do gravitate towards, the changes. So yes, they are successful. Yes, we have seen the successes. The kids do ask for repeated sessions. They want to learn more. They want to do better. So we need to stop creating barriers for ourselves and for our kids, because we're putting ourselves at risk. We're putting our kids at risk.
Okay. So we are going to a commercial break, and we'll be right back with Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment, and we'll be going to Rian Chang.
If you want to be 80 and living, cut the soft drinks out your system. Cut them off. Diabetes be sneaking up on us, please pay attention. Please. All these sweeties and salty chips, them just give hypertension. Get some old fashioned itch, do a tilt it back and start sipping. What you think that you getting yourself into when you sitting up on a bed? Steady watching movies like 24/7. Try on going your garden, I pick a fruit or start farming, because the state of the health of summer, we mind is alarming.
Jeez, on bread. Real talk, that Gary wanna sell.
We are back with Let's reimagine our school environment. And I'm here with Natasha, Dr. Natasha Sobers, Mr. Christopher Loray, Ms. Rihanna Chang with Slow Food. Natasha is with UWI, and Christopher is the coordinator for the Heart and Stroke Foundation Youth Section. So we are speaking about ways we can reimagine the school environment and some of the things that may come up as barriers to doing so, and how can we overcome those barriers. I would like, if we can get a few callers to call in and give us some of their ideas, because as I said before, it's a community effort with everything as it relates to our children, with everything that we have to fight as a country. It's always going to be about the community and how we help each other. You can give us a call at 434-1790 or 434-1790. Rianne, can you please give us some ideas as to how we can reimagine our school environment using these planting projects as a way to get our children interested in growing and preparing their own foods? And in turn, we know that once children are involved in doing these things, I know that they can coerce their parents and the persons that they live with in doing these things. So can you give us an idea of how this can be done in schools and how that can reflect into the home environment?
Great. I've been so inspired by what Natasha and Christopher said. So I just want to put it out there. My background is Bachelor of Science in Agriculture Development, and I did my master's in gastronomy. So it's a world where food, community, and health intersect. That's where I'm most excited about. So even the word reimagine, you know, where we've been in a pandemic the last year and a half, you know, people have gone through these existential crises. And again, you know, it's been really hard for everyone across the board. You know, people have lost jobs. It's been really tough as a food and nutrition security. And I think, you know, when people sit back, everyone's thinking about health, their loved ones, talking about vaccines. So as we're talking about now against childhood obesity, what if, you know, every child had the right to be healthy? What if every school was a regenerative garden or food forest with things growing all around, you know, that people were cooking farm to school, garden to table? What if kids, you know, as much as they advocated for apples and grapes and quarter, that they knew all about jamun and soursop, how to cook it, what were the health benefits of pomegranates in season? And I want to echo that those examples, like what Christopher said with the water on Wednesdays, that if you can make that personal connection with the kid, and gardens are very easy to do that because, again, you're using all the senses, and if you're using that as your pedagogy for education, that once kids can have a memorable experience, they remember that for life. So even as an example, we did the virtual program, and one seven-year-old, we were talking about different food benefits. Of course, a seven-year-old must be influenced by his grandparents, because he said, you should eat more pomegranates because it helps prevent prostate cancer. You know, or their uncle planted couscous grass because they saw that, you know, it helped with soil erosion in the environment, but also that they would put the couscous grass in the drill at night. Or even just in addition, I think, to reimagine this world that we all know about the uses of plants. So from an ecological perspective, I think that's really important, how gardens can be this multidisciplinary learning space that you could use not only as a classroom, but for cooking demos with chefs, have nutritionists like yourself, Nicole, to come in and break down all the different macro and micronutrients. And I think that's what it needs to be engaged in. Oftentimes we can critique the Caribbean education system for being very limited, but then when you can open up an outdoor space beyond walls, what that can do, and I think especially in the time of a pandemic, you know, when everyone's been cooped up, and even Heart and Stroke has shared some of the research done about the increase of obesity for some of the research participants, that it's more important than ever that we can no longer wait. And I guess it's really exciting now with the National School Nutrition Policy being passed, and how that's going to reform when students are back in the classroom setting. Where is that policy? Where is the money going to be invested? Whether it's in, you know, purchasing more of the locally produced agribusiness products that are better for the health, whether it's banning all of these unhealthy sugary products. I think it has to be a top-down and a bottom-up approach, and that's where you get the impact zone in the middle, and that's where the education comes in. Because ideally, you know, if we were to reimagine 20 years from now, What would a healthier Barbados look like, not only with regards to what people are eating, but against local Barbados, we take the lens of agriculture and nutrition security, that this also falls into the Ministry of Agriculture, the need to bolster more production of local food products, the need to reimagine how persons are processing the local resources, such as bread food, like what Odin Foods has done recently. And as you can have more products available on the shelf, where the marketing comes in, where the kids are even more knowledgeable about the uses of the local fruits and vegetables compared to imported products from far away. And it's unfortunate, you know, but again, this does take a while. It's not overnight. But when you have great organizations such as Heart of Stroke and UWE and charities and nonprofits all working together, we fill the gaps of what government hasn't been doing, and to put that extra pressure that we know we need to have a lasting change in the food system and in the public health campaign of our children.
All right, so I know, again, it's 434-1790. That's the number you can ask us any question you want to ask us. You can give us your ideas. And I know for sure we have been lobbying for front of package labeling. And that is one way that we can guarantee that our children will not have to have any scientific background. They will not have to have, they don't have to have any special skills other than to read and be able to see at the front it says, warning, high sugar, high salt, high, whatever is high in that is not good for you, it will have it there. And so I know for sure that Heart and Stroke, and I don't know if Natasha could give us an insight on, you know, how that will help. But I know it will help, because obviously we can't have children 4 and 5 years old going to the supermarket and trying to figure out how to read a label. Before you come on, Natasha, we have a caller on the line. Caller, you are with us on Let Us Reimagine Our Health in Our School Environment. Go ahead.
Hi, good night. I have a question regarding the addition of healthy items in schools now. I was wondering, as we are looking to do this, and that's what you guys are pushing for, how do you foresee these products being more affordable or affordable in the current price range of the things that are currently offered for the students, or do you see it being more expensive?
Natasha, Christopher, Rianne, any of you who see it fit, you can go ahead and answer.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in just before Christopher, because I know that so I love that question by the caller, and I know that the Heart and Stroke Foundation has been working with the vendors to, you know, bring foods into the school that are affordable and, you know, that match with what the vendors want. So it's not like we're going to take out everything, you know, immediately or whatever, but they're working with the vendors. They actually have a list of things that are feasible for persons to buy. They're inexpensive, and they also have, they're also low in sugar. So the Heart and Stroke Foundation have been working with the vendors with that list to make sure that things are affordable and nutritious. And that list is definitely coming, because we thought about that. And I just also want to say to, because I was talking to the children, like Christopher said about the healthy, about buying the healthy foods. And we say that these things are expensive, but water is pretty cheap. One, it's free when it comes from the water coolers and so on. So yeah, that's how my children save money. When I give them their allowance, they decide that they're going to just drink water as opposed to buying drinks. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that when you compare, children sometimes go and buy, you know, a pack of some corn kernels for like $1.50 or $2. When they could also buy an apple for $1. Corn kernels are not filling, and the apple will probably be more filling than the corn kernels. Same thing with a banana. Banana is actually high glycemic index, so it has in your sugar, it has in your fiber, and it's not expensive at all. So what we want to try to do, caller, is that we want to try to present the cheaper, healthy options, because we sometimes have this idea that the healthy options are expensive, and some of them are, granted, but not all of them are. And even getting to the habit of having people choose sort of different things. So sometimes I started putting things in my children's lunchbox, like cucumber, but especially when cucumber is in season, that's really, really inexpensive. Cucumbers are cheap, right, when they're in season. So like I said, as a program and as a system, Heart and Stroke is working with vendors to make sure that we can find foods that are both nutritious and inexpensive. And I also want to say too, with the money aspect, Rihanna, I would wish a school garden was in every school, but I know some schools were using the food gardens as fundraisers. Yeah, they were using their school gardens as fundraisers, some, especially the secondary schools. So that could replace, you know, some of the persons selling some sugar sweetened beverages to the children and still give the schools money as well. So I would love to see, a school garden in every school, and any schools, if they can get together and sell some to the large supermarkets or the small supermarkets, I think that that can work financially. But I also, you know, I think Christopher might have something on this because they've been working with the vendors very closely. Chris?
Yes, definitely. Thanks, Natasha. So just to reiterate and to support the points that were just made, we spoke about the model schools, our six model schools that we had been working with previously. And part of this holistic program is that we were offering or and working with the vendors, but not just the vendors, at all levels of the school environment, because we understand that it's not just about educating the children to do better, as it were, but you have to have a multidimensional layers of support. So you work with the vendors, you work with parents, we did sensitization sessions. We recently had a parents forum, which was supported by the Ministry of Education as well, and is accessible on our online Facebook platform as a recording. We also worked with the staff and administration. So we are talking to every single person that interacts within the school environment. And it is important to have these multi-level, multi-layered approaches, because we understand that, again, at the level of policy, if you don't have access to the alternatives, you can't do better. You can't choose what is not there. So when the caller asked about you know, cheaper alternatives, I do definitely appreciate that. I mean, we all went to school and we all, you know, go into the grocery stores, our supermarkets, and sometimes we gravitate towards, or a lot of the times, just to say it bluntly, we do gravitate towards options that are cheaper. But better option. And then to pick up on something that Natasha mentioned, where you have this idea of healthy products being more expensive, you can start to see in a very direct way when these measures are put into place that the dollars add up when you go quote unquote cheaper, and not just in the immediate buy. Because if you put, let's say, you know, a popular item such as a chicken and chip special, and the fries are going to be fried as a preparation methods. So the fries are going to be fried, the chicken is going to be breaded, and it's going to be deep fried as well. And then you get, you know, you might get a biscuit, you might get a bread roll or something. And you're spending $16 on that. And when you comparatively say that a whole chicken that you can get from the supermarket is $12 to $14, and that serves and gives at least 8 pieces, it's not adding up. So we've had these kinds of censuses within these supermarkets. We work with nutritionists to identify a number of products which are affordable, which are not going to break the budget. And we have been working with the vendors within these schools continuously to encourage them, to show them how to create these healthier products, how to reduce the unhealthy nutrients which are going into them, whether it be sugar, salt, or fat. And, you know, it's a continuous dialogue, but they have been successful. The vendors are receptive to these messages, and it is not as unattainable. It is not unaffordable as we tend to think. We have this perception that healthy equals expensive, and that's just not true. Depending on what you're using, it can be, but it doesn't have to.
Thank you, Christopher, so much. We are here with Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment, and we are going to go for commercial break. We'll be right back.
If you want to be 80 and living, cut the soft drinks out your system.
Cut them
off. Diabetes be sneaking up on us, please pay attention. Please. All these sweeties on salty chips, them just give hypertension. Got some old fashioned itch, do a tilt it back and start sipping. What you think that you getting yourself into when you sitting up on the bed? Steady watching movies like 24/7. Try on going your garden, I pick a fruit or start farming. Because the state of the health of summer, we mine is alarming.
Jeez, oh, bread. Real talk, that Gary wanna sell.
We are back here with Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment. Remember our numbers to get us at is 434-1790. And we are back here discussing the alternatives that we can use to reimagine our school environment. And just going back to Christopher and Natasha's point, I can speak to one of the alternatives that we have been working on at Heart and Stroke Foundation. Currently, we are trying to embark on a project called the Healthy Snack Alternative, or should I say not even just healthy, but a snack alternative. Because we do understand that children will be children at some point and adults will be adults. But we do understand that we can get some of those snacks in smaller versions that carry less of what is harmful to our kids, and we can also have healthier options that don't carry those things at all. And so throughout the time, and it's interesting that Christopher included the front of package labeling, because we had about four nutritionists who were a part of the panel at the time, and we all went into different supermarkets across the island, from country to town to everywhere we could have gone, we went. And some of the items that said low in fat, or that they were healthy, or give the impression of being healthy that the average person will go in and pick up because they assume that it's healthy, we realized that when we actually bought those items and collected them and went home and analyzed those products, supposed to be. So that project is one that we are looking forward to when it is launched. There's some function that needs to be done in order for it to be able to be used by the consumer. But we imagine that that is going to be very good, because it does speak to those things that we assume to be expensive. But a lot of the items that we have collected and we have realized in terms of comparing the price per the unit or serving, we realize that really and truly, a lot of the items that we deem expensive are really cheaper than the items that we do not assume to be expensive. And most of the time, the reason we do gravitate to those items are because we assume that they are more convenient. And so nobody wants to cut their own watermelon, so we just go and buy some watermelon cookies instead. And we get all caught up in the illusion that if it shaped like a watermelon, it looked like a watermelon, maybe, you know, it might want some watermelon, just eat that. But if you look at the cost per the serving, you will realize that really and truly, if you just go and you buy that watermelon and just take the time and put in some Ziploc bags, or if you buy a what we call a 75-cent apple here in Barbados, some snacks run all the way up to $5 if you check. I mean, a very small snack that has no nutrient value whatsoever, but it's high in fat, sugar, and salt, sometimes costs up to $4.50, and I'm wondering how kids actually do afford to buy multiple snacks, because they don't just buy one most times, they buy multiple snacks. It is amazing how they buy those items, but you can get entire, when we look, we realize that at some supermarkets, you could get up to 10 apples for less than $10. So, as we always say, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So if we can get persons to really look into how much they're spending and not buy on impulse, and it always comes down to meal planning. And if you plan for something, you know what you're going to be spending. But if you go in the supermarket and you shop haphazard, you're going to have the issue. So that is what we're trying to hope. We're hoping that with this alternative map to having alternative snacks and beverages for your kids, that you are able, even if you cannot plan or have the ability to meal plan as much as someone else, that you are still able to use that map when you go to the supermarket and say, hey, not picking a particular brand, but being able to say, hey, this cookie is similar to X cookie that is on the alternative list. And so maybe this one they can use for my cake. Let me compare what they said in the nutrients for the other cookie brand, and they can use this. So it's not about endorsing any brands, but it's for you to have like something to look at and be able to say, okay, what's on the back of this is on the back of what they have the alternative. So that brand that they have may be a little bit more expensive, but this one is cheaper and it has the same things and the same values, then they can use this. And it's just to give, because parents are very busy and some kids are with their grandparents and they just don't have the time to deal with the researching items for themselves. Yes. So that map, Christopher, is one of those ways that parents can just not think about it and be able to say, this is the same thing. Let me look at the back and that's it and be good to go. So we are hoping that follows through. And
yeah, I just want to say, Nicole, that is really, really important. Work along with the front of package labeling, because people having to decide, you know, what is nutritious and what is not, is really, really difficult. So I think that alternative mapping that you're doing and front of package labeling to help people really know what is in the foods, and what you said at the beginning about finding out, realizing that what was in the back was not quite what they had said, really important work. So I just love the alternative mapping along with the front of package labeling to really help our persons make healthy choices. So I just wanted to say that. I think that's really important.
Thank you.
I want to echo that as well. I'm really excited to see the results of that as a tool to like hold people's hands, because I think one thing out of the pandemic, as I talked about, food access has been a hot topic as well. I mean, as the food, we saw that firsthand that when schools closed, a lot of the kids who depended on the school meal as their only they're only nutrients for the day, unfortunately, in the more vulnerable, marginalized communities. So we started a soup kitchen to serve that. And it's been interesting, the amount of, I guess, requests from families with kids who want to know about quick, healthy eating options, especially on a budget, and how to provide that nutritional information for them in a way that's accessible. So I guess in this the way forward again is how to include, again, like as Christopher said, that multi-layered approach to getting to the people who want the information and put in those options as that roadmap. If you have $5, this is what you can buy instead of the high fat sodium cheap. And again, even cheap being this perception too of what is subsidized, what are the hidden costs of the perfect French fries, what are the long-term health problems that are going to come from it. I myself, as a kid, I know that all my baby teeth were rotten from being addicted to Coca-Cola. So from firsthand, luckily I found another way out. But again, thinking of all the other kids that I worked with and some of the questions, they're like, in class, ma'am, why do we have to cook vegetables for dinner? From another five-year-old, and like those simple things. But then again, that chance to storytelling in a creative way, whether it's a visual manner, again, working with the vendors, but what is the information we're putting out there that competes with the corporate manufacturers that unfortunately have all of the sugary items at first glance. And there's so many marketing tactics that I think this approach that we have all together, how to infiltrate the market with the right information. And for the single mother, or for someone who doesn't know how to read all these different ingredients because we can't pronounce it, again, that front of label packaging will be more important than ever to help make it people's lives easier. Again, the government, once they come on board, it's a circular economy at the end of the day. They are going to save so many millions of dollars from public health care, in addition to all the COVID care right now. So I think in the long-term benefits to come on board, and again, if the government was to invest in local manufacturing of products to help give these healthy snack alternatives, could you imagine? I think there's a lot of innovation and technology that's available. And if we put the children's health first, I think there's so much more that can come out of it. So again, we have to be creative. This is the time to do it. Yes, we're in a pandemic and resources are limited, but it's now or never.
And thank you, Rianne. I think that's very interesting too, because most times when you make kids have access to having fruits and vegetables, and I know in schools, especially if you have a school that does agriculture and those type of things, that they always, when it's the season for cherries or if it's the season for guavas or whichever fruit is in season, the kids really keep their money in their pockets and they run them to wherever the garden is and they pick those items. So maybe that is another initiative that we could look at where If the school grows seasonal fruit, those same fruits can be used for the same children within the same school environment. And then that for those who may not have the money to purchase these items, they now can have an alternative way of getting something nutritious in place of those unhealthy snacks. Before we go, I just want to say that, you know, the Heart and Stroke Foundation has been pushing for the front of label packaging, as we were speaking about before. And this week we are about to launch with Jamaica, the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Jamaica, the front of packaging mass media campaign. And it is tomorrow at 11 a.m. And we are hoping that through this, that we are able to try to get others on board and to get governments and other organizations and citizens across the Caribbean region to realize that frontal package labeling is one of the ways to go if we are going to ensure that persons who are unable and or may not have the ability to read labels and in any in-depth manner be able to do so without having to stress or it become a burden to do so. And through that, hopefully we can help with the NCD and also help with other situations that we have that come out of having non-communicable diseases. Natasha, Christopher, and Rianne, I want to thank you for being here. And can you please give us your last words as we wrap up the show?
Hi. Yes, thank you so much for that. Shout out to our launch of our mass media campaign, Nicole. So tomorrow, the Heart and Stroke Foundation will be undertaking this venture in collaboration with the Heart Foundation of Jamaica. The reason why we're doing this is because we want to show a strong regional support for these measures. It's not just that we're trying to implement these in Barbados, although obviously we are concerned about our citizens, but we want to understand that we're all in this together. And I want to stress that because throughout the Caribbean, we do have a very high rate of non-communicable diseases that we have been talking about this evening. We know that 1 in 3 children are affected by overweight and obesity, and this translates to them throughout their life course. When we talk about these diseases, yes, we are focused on the kids, and we have been talking about the school environment throughout, but we look at all ages and all stages of your development. And we know that these health conditions do impact you long-term. There's a reason why we say that they're chronic, because they occur and affect you over time. So we might not see the direct effects when you're a child, but they do affect you. And I can tell you that Barbados spends in excess of $64 million US dollars every single year in its care and support of persons living with chronic diseases. Unfortunately, we do have a rate of 8 out of 10 persons who are dying prematurely from these chronic diseases, with cardiovascular diseases, those conditions that affect your heart and blood vessels, being one of our highest incidences within Barbados. And this is consistent throughout the Caribbean and consistent throughout populations that are similar to ours. So it's important that we address these things, not just through education in schools, but at policy level. And I hope that our listeners who have been following along with us do understand that we do need to address these from the governmental level, and we need policymakers to assist us, because without the environment that supports these changes, without the environment that supports these measures, we're not able to do better for ourselves and for our children.
Thank you, Christopher. And quickly, Natasha and Rianne, can you just tell me the ideal school environment for you as we are wrapping up our program?
Yeah, so in 30 seconds, Nicole, I'll just say that Christopher noted that 1 in 3 children is overweight or obese, so 33%. And if we don't do something about it, it's going to be 50% by 2050. That is the estimation. So I imagine a school environment where the classrooms are filled with A for apples, B for bananas, C for carrots. A school environment where we are infiltrating our children's brain with healthy foods and healthy choices and giving them the opportunity to run around and be physically active. Because we're asking them to do these things, and the marketing people know that if we shape our children's brains and we show them these messages, it's going to work. So we have to do the same thing. We have to show them all the proper messaging. We have to support them through by staff modeling, so teacher modeling. We have to support them through parents. So yes, I'm wrapping up. Thank you very much for having me. And I can see a wonderful, fantastic school environment if we do all these wonderful things.
Quickly, everyone deserves to be healthy and nourished. It is food is a human right. And what if every school kids were able to learn how to grow their own food, where it came from, how to cook the food in a way that's nourishing, and also the benefits that it has for the body and for the community. So what if there was a food forest in every school and all of Barbados could be fed off of things that are coming from the ground itself? So thank you, everyone. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on Let Us Reimagine Our School Environment. And remember, tomorrow we are having our launch with the Harhan Stroke Foundation of Jamaica, and it's at 11 a.m. And I want to thank you. Join us here next week at 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thank you.
If you want to be 80 and living, cut the soft drinks out your system.
Cut them
off. Diabetes be sneaking up on us, please pay attention. Please. All these sweeties on salty chips, them just give hypertension.
Got some old fashioned itch, do or tilt it back and start sipping.
What you think that you getting yourself into when you sitting up on the bed? Steady watching movies like 24/7.
Try on going your garden, I pick a fruit or start farming, because the state of the health of summer,
we mind is alarming.
Jeez, bread. Real talk, that Gary wanna sell, nah?